Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is December 19th, 2013. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, it's the holidays. Our holiday card is up on the blog. If you haven't seen it yet, you definitely want to see Santa's reindeer pulling Santa in his spacecraft. Our donations for the year are up there, and we've also highlighted them on the blog. Also, give the gift of Solari. What we're offering is for every subscriber who would like to give 2 months of complimentary subscription to the Solari Report to the person of your choice. That is there as well. And if you want to take avail yourself of it, please, if you haven't yet, contact customer service. Our theme tonight is get ready, get ready, get ready. And that's because if you think the speed of change has been dazzling in 2013, it's going to accelerate in 2014. And with it, there's a lot of very positive news. One of the stories of the week, kudos to Chuck Gibson, who keyed me into this. Algae to oil in less than an hour. We've seen lots of efforts to turn algae to oil that planes, trucks, cars could use. I've posted several articles on efforts underway at MIT to do that, but announced from the one of the federal labs is a process to do it in record time, and that's what it takes to really make it economic. And so they're saying they can turn it, essentially, they're describing it as pond scum, to oil in less than an hour. And of course, that's oil that planes, trains, and other modes of transportation cars can use up. So for all of those who thought you had pond scum on your ponds, no, that may just be oil that can fuel your car. So very exciting story. Another story that fits in with it, as we have an explosion in innovation and new technology, we're also seeing efforts underway by the regulators to allow lots more money to flow more easily into the equity markets. The SEC announced a higher limit on small stock deals under the Jobs Act, boosting it by a multiple of 10 times. That's Reg A. It overrides the state process. That's a big one, and it indicates, along with a strong IPO market, that there's more and more money flowing into early venture and private equity that's looking to go public or raise capital. So as we see the explosion of innovation on the one side of the balance sheet, expect a higher degree of liquidity investment on the other side of the balance sheet. And we've seen a shrinking in the North American markets of the number of companies in the stock market. This is all set to dramatically increase the number of companies in the stock market. So watch out for it. It's going to be very interesting. Part of that is related to another story up on the blog. Reuters has a big piece on Pentagon waste. So I had to say something. I said, in a world of modified limited hangouts, the Pentagon waste story is the equivalent of the Caddyshack gopher. You can't kill it, although it makes no sense, and it just won't go away. It's the ultimate cover story. Well, sure enough, I suspect it's not unrelated to plans underway to re-engineer the defense base. A lot of the infrastructure in North America, industrial infrastructure, has been run on a cost-plus basis because that's the way government contracting is run. Now, with the fiscal cliff upon us, there's tremendous pressure to re-engineer that federal base, and I think this is part of it. And so it dovetails with the new innovation, the changes in the SEC rules related to raising capital, and the sort of decentralization and shifting that base to being much more phenomenally productive and generating more profits for companies. That's part of it. So don't believe the waste story. We had to put up again a link to one of our pages on missing monies. Okay, money and markets. The big story in the markets this week, of course, was the Fed announcing that they are going to taper starting in January. Their balance sheet has now exploded to $4 trillion of assets, which is pretty mind-boggling. Although, as you know, I think many of those assets are essentially worthless. I think they've been having a shredding party cleaning up the fraud. But what they did do is announce that they're cutting their $85 billion a month of purchases of both Treasury and mortgage securities back by $10 billion a month. I put up a little commentary in the blog, which said Fed delivers bah humbug to gold. Stock market was up slightly, you know, sort of record high territory. But gold down, and then this morning broke through the 1200 line. I put another link up to my article on what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals, where I strongly recommend if we breach the 1200 line that you only be holding core position at that point, that you sell out of any investment positions, because I think breaching the 1200 line, it can go much lower, particularly if it breaches 1180 is the line that Franklin and I talked about in the last precious metals market report. So gold looks very, very weak here. So if you haven't, if you continue to maintain investment positions in gold, you definitely want to read that article. We're coming into the time of year when at the end of the year and the end of the fourth quarter, we look at how the different asset categories have really been for the year. And there's a great, you know, that's a time when asset allocations really get looked at. And what's important to understand is that essentially almost everything was down this year other than North American markets. We have emerging markets down about 8 to 9%, commodities down much, much more, with gold approaching 30% down. But you have some commodities down more than 50 or 60%. It's an extraordinary time for the commodities markets. North America is now up over 20%, but the bond funds, long-term treasury funds, down 10 to 14%. So with emerging markets down, bond funds down, commodities down, gold and precious metals down, North America is up sharply, but everything else is down. And so the question, if you're a money manager, is do you keep your money in things that are high and with the hope that they go higher, or do you start to look at the other thing, other asset categories, which is difficult because they're still flat or going down. So the question remains, can North America continue to go up? Very big question. Bonds have been coming down for about, you know, the long-term bull market in bonds has been going on since 1980. So we see interest rates falling until this year. And then starting this year, they started to spike up. And so making a lot of these fixed income positions more unnerving. I also just wanted to show you a chart of North American markets versus the emerging markets, because when the QEs, when the quantitative easing and sort of central bank pumping started after the bailouts, the emerging markets in North America were trading up together, but they've diverged tremendously this year. Part of that is a commodity story, with the emerging markets much more tied to commodities. But when you look at the North American markets, we're at a PE of 24 or higher, which is very high on average. But if you look back since the beginning of the S&P index in the 1880s, what you see is there have been two spikes that took us much, much higher. One was the what's called the Roaring Twenties, and then, of course, the tech bubble. And if you look at the new technology coming out and what the sort of rule changes that the SEC is making and the strength of the IPO market, the question is, could it happen again? But whatever way we look around the markets, the bad news about the legacy systems is everywhere. That's very much a bond story. And the good news about what's going on is, or about the good news about what's going on that's positive is percolating, but it's amazing how much of it still remains hidden. But you can see it when you look at the S&P 500. Currency wars continue to get more and more intense. We have the same battle between the old and the new, and between centralization versus decentralization. The Bank of England, and this is up on the blog, announced they're going to plastic currency by 2016, so more digital currency essentially. The largest Bitcoin exchange in China, BTC China, announced that they are no longer going to accept yuan deposits. And that's on the heels of the central bank, China Central Bank, saying that the country's banks and payment system were barred from handling the virtual currency. Doesn't surprise me. If I was China, I wouldn't want a digital currency that leaves a digital trail coming in and soaking up my good currency. So on that announcement, Bitcoin fell by over 50%, or approximately 50%, which is why I keep saying never put any money in Bitcoin except that which you're prepared to lose 100%. While that was going on in the digital currency side, South Korea announced they're starting a physical gold exchange. And as I pointed out in my commentary in the blog, this follows on the heel of Singapore, Moscow, Thailand, a series of different countries doing the same thing. And it's not surprising that as we see more and more push towards digital currencies and plastic currencies, that the big financial centers, or the certainly the financial centers in the areas which are growing, the sort of BRIC nations, not in the G7, that those players want the ability to settle in something real and without necessarily leaving a digital trail, which is why I say in my article on precious metals that I pointed you to, you want to continue to hold your core position. The growing economies of the world are certainly building theirs. We continue to see more and more reports of gold being moved to China. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it in Ask Catherine. And I would just underscore the fact that we really don't see the full picture on what's going on. The data beast is on the march. I call it the data beast after an article I wrote called The Data Beast, which I really encourage you to read. But there are numerous articles up on the blog about the NSA battle and the battle over surveillance. Let me tell you what the end game here is, because you're going to start to see more and more as these different, whether it's the litigation or congressional policy or different private companies positioning themselves in certain ways vis-a-vis the NSA. What the end game is here is we're watching an effort by the shadow government to really cut out the government. They're going to depend on the telecoms, on the search engines, social media to run the sort of surveillance infrastructure. And what we're seeing is a cutting of the power of the government now that government funding has basically paid for the building out of the network. A lot of those companies built a lot of what they did as government contractors. So basically, taxpayer money has built out the network, but now the private guys can take it over. And the NSA is subject to FOIA, is subject to congressional oversight. If you want to understand the dynamic, we had on the Saleri Report about a year or two ago the movie, Italian movie called The Listening, which shows the shift in the balance of power between the contractors behind the NSA, and the NSA is one of the sort of subplots in the movie. And what it reminds you is the compromise of privacy will be much worse under the private guys. I put up, somebody sent me an article that was a impassioned defense of the NSA by a former employee, and I posted it. And it tells one side of the story. The budget deal continues to be headed for approval, but the Secretary of the Treasury reminds us again this week that the debt limit extension is still not resolved. The deadline is February 1st is when they say they're running out of money. And so if we're going to have a sort of a get off to a stable start, we need more than a two-year budget deal. We need the debt limit issues resolved. The other thing is Congress did not renew unemployment, which is a little bit surprising because the long-term unemployment extensions, because that's going to be an immediate whack to the GNP in the first part, in the first quarter of the year. And it's certainly a bah humbug to happen at Christmas. It'll be interesting to see how this plays in 2014, because the employment situation continues to be bleak for many, many people. We continue to put the fiscal cliff pieces, cycle them up on the blog. And if you don't want to read it in one sitting, I would encourage you to check it out each week. Just happened today, Obama issues veto threat over Iran. So the Iran deal continues to be dicey and very politically sensitive. We see Saudi Arabia kicking up their heels and screaming all week long, and I doubt that that's unrelated to the politics between the president and the Senate over the Iran bill. China is celebrating its first lunar probe. It successfully landed its probe on the moon and now announcing it's planning on sending another craft in 2017 that will land and return with samples. So the race for space is on, and we'll talk more in the wrap-up this year about the incredible growth and explosion of investment in space. It's very real. Good news for 2013, the Trans-Pacific Partnership ended the negotiations for the year with no deal. They could not get to closure. Hallelujah. Anyway, so we'll have to come up with stratagems to make sure that doesn't happen in 2014. Under the category, no. Iceland put some bankers in jail and has come up with a new constitution. And this is widely being circulated around the internet as to the implication being, oh, maybe we should consider a new constitution and start crowdfunding our constitution. Don't go there. Don't think that's a good idea. If you think things are bad now. Wait, do you see what happens if Mr. Global can talk people into putting the constitution in play? Don't even open that one. There are also a variety of various articles about how wonderful it would be if we could give up property rights, how wonderful if everything could be not-for-profit, we all need to share, we all need to stop trying to own our own homes, and all sorts of other various attempts to market feudalism and, you know, sort of personal financial powerlessness is fashionable. Don't buy it. You know, that's under the rubric of what's coming with the NSA scandal, which says government's bad. Let's give the telecoms control. Anyway, so these are, you know, fascism being fronted as reform. Don't buy into it. Interestingly enough, my last comment in Money and Markets for this week is there was a Wall Street Journal poll, page 2 of the Wall Street Journal this week on Wednesday, entitled Politics Divide the Sexes. And interestingly enough, there were 8 different topics from the economy to gun control, and I agreed with the men 7 out of 8 times, which I thought was interesting. If you look at the wide disagreements, and they are wide disagreements between the genders, it struck me that many of the positions taken by the women in the polls were very much sort of positions that were relate to the spin that tugs at the heartstrings, as opposed to looking at the deeper story and watching what's really going on. So I would just say to all the ladies out there, make sure when you think about your assessment of different policies, you look at what's really going on, what the deeper story is, and beware of the heartstrings being pulled. It's one of Mr. Global's favorite things to do, is pull the heartstrings and get the women to sort of pull the rug out from under the men. So remember to be very discerning. Don't buy it for a second. Okay, our hero this week is Dave Andrew. One of our donations is a wonderful organization in East Troy, Wisconsin, Michael Fields Agricultural Institute, interestingly enough, in Paul Ryan's congressional district, no connection to why it was chosen. It is an institute to teach biodynamic farming. The Michael in Michael Fields comes from Archangel Michael. It was started by 2 wonderful people, a couple, Chris and Martina Mann, who wanted to make sure that the knowledge of how biodynamic farming was preserved and passed on. Dave was a farmer for many years in Iowa. He has a family farm and then worked at the Iowa State University Extension and ended up going abroad to manage farming operations in the Philippines and Romania, Africa, and the Middle East. Very well traveled. And he was recruited by Chris and Martina to run Michael Fields. And one of the things he's done since he came there is to do a series of things and try and get funding for programs to reach out to veterans interested in learning how to farm. And I can't think of a more worthy and appropriate cause to support. So thank you, Dave, for everything you do. We love farmers, but we really love farmers who teach other people how to farm. It's what we need. Ask Catherine. This one I read before. I wanted to just touch on it again. Hello, Catherine. I'm a new subscriber. I followed your work on Unpacking Mr. Global for a few years with great delight and enthusiasm. Nothing interests me more, excites me more than putting on the They Live glasses and looking behind the curtain. I have many questions, but I'll ask only one for now. Concerning Al Gore's recent anti-oil campaign, do you think it's possible Mr. Global is using useful idiot Gore to get big university endowments to sell their blocks of shares in a bit of a panic to power elite insiders? This question is premised on the assumption that Mr. Global has big plans for exporting refined product, petrochemicals, LNG, and shoring up the empire from its base in the U.S., along with agriculture, as you point out, this article from Foreign Affairs on Americans' energy opportunity. Was this the article you were thinking of in the Jim Norman interview? Basically says, harm the Middle East, decrease consumption of refined product in U.S. by using alternatives at the margin, and then export refined product in LNG. Basically, Al Gore says, sell big oil, and Warren Buffett buys Exxon. I think Warren is savvy and Gore is a stooge. What do you think? Thanks for your time, Catherine. I know you're busy. Interestingly enough, Buffett just announced a major wind energy deal, going to be a combination of renewable and, or he just announced a major wind deal. I think what the Council on Foreign Relations has said, and or what they've published as articles in Foreign Affairs saying, what we want to see is a combination of fossil fuel and renewable fuels. We want to essentially have a very robust, very diverse and resilient energy base, which I think is the case. I do think this idea of Gore running around and doving tail with a university endowment selling oil and gas is a very interesting development, and I'm glad you asked about it. I'm not sure what it's about. I do think there's a lot of innovation coming. My guess is what it's about is if you're going to engineer a new sort of tech bubble, you want to get people excited about the possibilities of new energy. At the same time, you may be hoping that that's going to help you export a lot more, and but you're certainly not going to give up the base. The fossil fuel base, I think, is going to be around for quite some time. So I think it does make an opening for the, you know, a new innovation bubble, and I think it makes it easier to export. So I think your points are very well taken. Dear Soleri, I've heard Catherine speak about similar activities that's been going on with our within our government. Here's an article and video discussion of people and companies who have been submitting their own technology to the government, and the government begins plagiarizing and using the technology for themselves. That's an old and very common story, so it doesn't surprise me. We put the post up to this story at Fox News. A lot of times it's not just the government, but you may have individual bureaucrats or politicians who see the opportunity to turn that, sort of give that technology and give it away in exchange for a variety of different formal and informal kickbacks. So, one should always assume with dealing with the government that you're not necessarily dealing with honorable parties. It was very interesting. I saw a very good interview of Elon Musk saying they never file patents because it just makes it easier for other people to steal it. I thought that was a very sage comment on his part. Next question. Could you please comment on the following information from John Hathaway of the Tocqueville Gold Fund? I put a link up on the blog of the article, of this article's, or we'll put a link up in subscribers to the piece by John. Essentially, what he's talking about is the sort of the march to financial and political repression, and what's going on is an effort to control more and more where money can go and how it's going to be managed. One of the things the person asking the question says, does this mean an outgoing bank wire is going to be stopped in the U.S. and 30% taken out if I send money to gold money? That's referring to penalties of sending money to a company that is not compliant with FATCA. I think it's very unlikely that gold money would be out of compliance, but we have seen wires stopped. There's sort of an ongoing economic warfare to keep money from flowing freely out of the country. There's never any problem when the money flows back in. I do think that what we're watching is a steady growth of repression. I do find Hathaway's article to be a little bit naive. I'm not worried. You know, the ultimate control is the control not of your money, but of your physical body. It's one thing to hold up bank accounts, but it's another thing to spray chemtrails over your head for the last 10 years. So I still have this sense of disassociation when I hear the financial guys rant about these things, because frankly, if you look at what's been happening with the food, with the vaccines, with chemtrails, The bigger problem is not that somebody's going to control my bank account. It's that they're going to poison me and I'll be dead long before my bank account is. So I think, you know, we're dealing with a very serious story of repression. If you look at the facts of what's been happening in the food supply, in environmental pollution, you know, a hypothesis of what is going on is an alien invasion at this point is more logical than the problems of currency and debasement. That's what I was writing about when I wrote my blog post, Breaking Through the Cloud Cover. If you haven't read it, you might want to go back. So yes, I agree with Hathaway, but I think the story is far deeper and it's a much greater problem. If you haven't seen the interview I did with Alex Jones in 2010 called The Looting of America, I think it lays it out pretty well. One of the things Hathaway talks about is the extraordinary amount of gold going to China. And yes, we're seeing reports, very significant reports of gold going to China. Hathaway, I should mention, is a very credible money manager. He runs the Tocqueville Gold Fund. I have the greatest respect for Hathaway. At the same time, I don't trust the information about gold going to China because the question is it really going to China or is that an air cover? Is it going someplace else? So I think the published information on the different inventories of gold leaves a lot to be desired. And I think there's a deeper story going on here and we don't yet know what it is, but I'm always interested to read what Hathaway has to say. Dear Catherine, Lindsay Williams made some comments about a global currency reset possibly on the horizon for 2014. I would like your thoughts on the likelihood of this occurring and who would benefit the most. Since almost all currencies are fiat these days, I find it hard to fathom what the replacement would be. Yet the thought of holding worthless dollars makes me want to put most of my assets in gold and silver. Currency resets have been happening all along. In essence, the debasement, you know, the kind of reset that Lindsay Williams is talking about is a fast reset. What the slow burn and the debasement has been is a slower reset. So the question is, are we going to do it fast or slow? I don't see the scenario that Williams described for 2014 as likely. I do think, as he talks about, the goal of Obamacare was control, and that with control of the healthcare system in place, it makes it easier to proceed with more rounds of financial repression. That's why it's so important in 2013 that the federal push for gun control failed, because I think a well-armed population is one of the few things standing in the way of the kind of financial repression that is possible. The big question on the currencies, of course, is not, I don't think it's the way Williams poses it. I think it's how fast can they get to an all-digital currency? Because if you can move to an all-digital currency, things can get pretty controlled. So with that in mind, I wouldn't say that you want to put all your assets in gold and silver. I don't think you want to put all your assets in anything. I'm a great believer in, having things spread around, but you certainly want significant assets and tangibles. You want assets invested in your health, your skills. You want much greater personal resilience. And I, for one, continue to believe that a good position, a core position in gold and silver is very appropriate. And that's why I think I wanted to highlight that story on the exchanges. You're watching the countries with very strong growth around the world going to a place where they can have very significant positions in gold and silver. So they want a core position. I think we do too. But I wouldn't put all your eggs in any basket, including gold and silver for sure. And don't expect gold and silver to trade well in the near future and maybe the intermediate future. Let's go to the movies because the winter blues are always a possibility during this time of year. I reposted our link to the 20 funniest movies that I put up a while ago. And of course, one of my favorites is the lead this week, and that's Rosalind Russell in Auntie Mame, which if you want to laugh over Christmas time, Auntie Mame will have you laughing. There's some wonderful movies there. My favorite part about that post was that lots of readers and subscribers jumped on and posted their favorite movies. So if you want a great selection of movies that will make you laugh and make you cry and make you glad to be alive, there's just a treasure trove And I really recommend that to you. Our interview tonight, this week, is with Dr. Laura Thompson, nutritionist from California, wife of John Rappaport, remarkable, natural, gifted healer. And it was a wonderful interview. It's posted up on the blog. One of the things I wanted to underscore, because I got several wonderful comments from various subscribers, is we had done a show on radiation poisoning. And one of the things Laura reported in the interview is that she's seeing more and more signs of one of the things she pointed out is she has a series of patients who are surfers. And there, she said the surfers who are surfing in the Pacific are getting sicker. And she described the symptoms. And we, of course, reminded you that we did do a discussion on radiation poisoning, and that's in the archive. Anyway, it was a wonderful interview, some great ideas about how to make sure that your immune system is as strong as possible during the winter months, things you can do. And for me, Laura is always inspiring. She always inspires me to say, wait a minute, let me stop rushing around and take some time to really take care of me. And it was really inspiring. So I hope you get a chance to listen over the holidays and be inspired to take better care of you, because one of the things I point out with Obamacare, it's really much more cost effective to invest the money in making sure you're as healthy as can be. Remember, a healthy immune system can save you a great deal of money. Okay, well, that's it for December 19, 2013. This is my last Soleri report of 2013. I'm going to go to work immediately. I already have on the annual wrap-up. This is very important time for me. We're going to be talking about the highlights of 2013, the top stories of the year, as well as what we've done in the Soleri report that we thought delivered great value to you for the year. We're going to talk about top trends to look forward to in 2014. Some of the things we at the Soleri Report are going to be focusing on, and we're going to announce our poster for 2014, which is just fantastic. Wait till you see it. I loved our one for 2013, Coming Clean, but we've got one you're going to love for 2014, and it's of course our theme for the wrap-up and for the year, so we can't wait for you to see it. We'll publish it right before the Friday before the wrap-up, so right at the end of December. And then on January 9th, Franklin will join us for the Precious Metals Market Report. A lot to talk about. We'll see how we close out the year. So I hope you all have just a wonderful holiday season. I'm holding all of you in my prayers for good health, good prosperity, and great new adventures in 2014. If you have any ideas, things you want me to cover on the wrap up, any ideas to get in there, I would really encourage you to post your comments or send them in by email. I want to make sure that one is a great one to help us sort of position our lives, our households, our budgets, and our investment strategy for 2014. So until January 2nd, 2014, I'll see you next year. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.